Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Coleman Had a Dream podcast. I am joined, as always, by Ruth. How are you doing, Ruth?
Okay, I mean, it's a Monday morning. We've had extra snow overnight. It's been a faff to get into town, so I'm all right. I just feel a bit Monday morning-ish.
Well, on the other side of that coin, I've had a full day of work, so I'm feeling very Monday evening-ish, if that's a thing. Well, I've got to say, ladies and gents, we had a right faff getting connected tonight. So I'm glad we've eventually got here to do this for you. We're going to be talking about the transfer window in January, the players who've been on the move. We're going to talk about some players who didn't get a move and what that might mean. We're going to answer some questions. We're going to look at how some of the Wales players are doing at the moment. And we're going to look ahead to the Nations League draw on Thursday before finishing by discussing the women's game against the Republic of Ireland on the 27th of February. And some news that has been announced around all of that today. Ruth, I have a slight admission to make, and I've purposely saved this for now. Did you see that
What have you done?
Well,
What have you done?
did you see what happened with me and Gary Lineker?
No.
Oh, I was hoping you'd see. I'm quite surprised actually, because I thought I was going to get a telling off after the Newport game. I very politely told Gary Lineker to fuck off because he referred to the Welsh National to the Cymru Premier, sorry, as a farmers league. And he actually replied to my message and said I was a farm joke grow up because Will Evans used to work on a farm. His dad is a farmer. So I got a response. And as a consequence, I got absolute dogs abuse from some people who appear to be Gary Lineker's best friends, which was very entertaining. But I thought I was going to get a telling off for that. So I did want to, you know, admit that to out in the open, that whilst Gary Lineker is aware of the Coleman Had a Dream podcast, I don't think he'll be hitting the subscribe button
anytime soon. Make a very good impression. Is that what you're telling me?
I think that's a fair description. I did reply actually and said, if you're still with Alan Shearer, can you tell him I've named my dog after him? And he didn't reply, which I thought was rude. But there you go. We're going to talk today about players who've moved in the January transfer window. Leeds appears to be the obvious place to start, Ruth, or Club Peldroid Leeds, as some people are calling them these days. Conor Roberts has gone there. I think it's a good move to him for him. Sorry, I think it's a good move. The fact that again he's just surrounded by some of the other Welsh lads. To be honest,
yes, I mean I'm sure it's a quick integration for him. And actually, in terms of where Leeds are with their fullback problem, particularly their right back problem, and the injuries they're carrying, the fact they're having to use Ampadu as a central defensive player recently and all of that, I think it actually works really well as a loan for both of them, doesn't it? He's used to top end of the Championship. He obviously had that promotion last year with Burnley. I think all round it actually seems a really good fit, both for him and for them. Fits a need they very much have, and hopefully we'll get him some good minutes in the remainder of the season.
Well, I think that's the key, isn't it? I think knowing what we have coming up ahead, having the knowledge that he is going to be playing on a regular basis is important for us. I think one of the things that we discussed after the Turkey game, and especially the Armenia game, was it Armenia we played? Do I mean Armenia in the last qualifiers? My mind's gone blank. Anyway, that team we played before Turkey. It was Armenia. He looked completely devoid of confidence, and I think him going somewhere now where he will play regularly and will have an important role to play, I think will be a big thing for him. It's also a funny change of gear, Ruth, that everyone always sings at football, we all hate Leeds. From a Welsh perspective, I think that may not be the case anymore.
No. I mean, it's they're not far off. They'll have half their team running out for our national team.
I was going to say, they're going to take over Rob Page's job at the minute, the way things are going.
No, but I mean, the way they're playing at the minute, you can imagine a back four that would actually include Roberts, Ampadu and Rodden. I mean, that can't be bad for us. It can only be good for us.
I know. The fact they're playing each other day in, day out as well in training, I think is going to be important. Yeah. Roy, who is someone who we see on Wales away trips, messaged me to say he's going to get a CPD Leeds flag set up. What, Leeds? So I think that'll be quite entertaining.
The double L would be class, actually, wouldn't
so.
it?
I think so. And instead of the Yorkshire, is it Yorkshire Rose? No, Yorkshire. Oh, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, they have a rose.
It is the Yorkshire Rose. Yeah. Instead of that, maybe we could get a little dragon in the middle of the flag, or a daffodil rather than the Yorkshire Rose. I think the biggest move of the window, as far as I'm concerned, is Kiefer Moore going to Ipswich. He's so important to how we play. The fact that he will be going there and hopefully getting regular game time is important. And again, doing it with Wes Byrne, Nathan Broadhead, going to be getting, you know, important minutes in a season where Ipswich are doing very, very well as well.
Yep, and it doesn't hurt you come on your first game and score two. I mean, I realise they lost the game ultimately 3-2, but they were dead and gone against Preston at half time. So to come on and get two goals, that's, you know, you're showing your worth immediately to the manager, to the rest of the team, to the fans. So that, you know, very good start in that respect as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of the time we've been talking about how do we fit around our playing system and our playing squad and who comes in where and who does what and whatever. I think him playing regularly and continuing to score goals, hopefully he will, I think takes a huge amount of that conversation out of the way and to an extent eases the pressure on Rob Page in terms of what decisions he's got to make, because I think he has to then start Kiefer Moore. I think there's no option there, and I think that's a positive for him. But I think the fact that it gives us a bit of certainty and a bit of I don't know, solidity or a bit of comfort, I guess, as we're going into the next game, I think is quite important.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've got to see what happens over the next, what is it, 6 weeks or so. But clearly it's a better state of play than it was a week ago. So we've got to be pleased with that.
Absolutely. And of course, Di Brooks has gone to Southampton. I really like the new Southampton Hummel shirt. I don't know if you've seen it. It's the first time I've really paid attention to the new home shirt, but it's like a half and half kind of different stripes and different reds on it. It's very nice, apart from the sponsor in the middle, which looks dreadful. But again, someone who I think, given everything that he's been through, the fact that he's going to be out there playing minutes for a team who, again, are doing really, really well in the Championship under a manager that suits his style of play, I think, and will want to get people off their seats and drive forward and attack people and take people on. Again, I think it'll be positive for his confidence.
Yes, obviously. I mean, even if he's just getting 15 to 20 minutes every game, that's clearly a step forward.
But yeah.
I think it's also interesting that all three of them have gone to teams that are, you know, they're going to have very meaningful games over the next few months. At worst, they're going to end up in the playoffs. And you'd imagine that one combination of this team is going to end up partnering Leicester as the automatic promotion team. So the fact that they're not just going to be playing regularly, they're actually going to be playing in really genuinely meaningful, important games is another plus as well. So I think it's not just the fact that they've moved. I think the quality of the teams they've gone to is telling, and the quality of what they're going to experience over the next couple of months is going to be important for us as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. High pressure, high stakes games is also what we're going to be building towards in March as well. So important for them to have that experience. I wanted to add to it that Jeffcott and Christian Doige have both moved as well. Jeffcott's gone to Newport and Doige gone to Forest Green. I appreciate they're probably not going to play for us, but I did think there were some nice, interesting moves, especially Jeffcott going to Newport, given how much we talked about him in times gone by. I think the big question marks, if you like, that I want to raise is the fact that Meppham and Ward didn't end up going. There's a lot of chat that Meppham was going to go somewhere else, possibly down to the Championship as well. He was even mooted to be going to Leeds at some point. And Ward, I don't know, I'm not sure how much of an issue I think the Ward one is, but Meppham, I think, is the one that needs discussing. Jordan James was also a lot of chat about him going to Atalanta at one point, and that never materialised. There was also chat about him going to Palace or Wolves later on in the window, and that Atalanta even put like an improved bid in for him later on. But again, nothing really came of that. I think it's interesting that teams are sniffing around him, and maybe in the summer that might be something that might get done. But I think the Meppham question is the big one, really. Is that an issue that for you that he's not moved, or is it just, you know, it's not the end of the world, it is what it is?
I think in what has actually been a relatively quiet window, looking at sort of holistically from a Wales point of view, you've got to be pleased with the number of players that we were concerned about, the number of them that have moved and are probably going to get decent minutes through the move at competitive teams. And that was never going to be an across the board outcome. So I'm not surprised that we've ended up with a couple of players in that situation. I think I get the feeling Ward's pretty happy being where he is at Leicester, and, you know, it doesn't seem to affect how he plays for us. So I'm with you, less of a concern. Looking at Meppham sort of more individually, then obviously, yes, you'd want him to be getting more playing time than he is at the minute. But I'm taking a bit more sort of 30,000 feet look at this, that I'm actually happy with things overall, and it, you, I'm accepting it was never going to work for everybody. I think it's also been a pretty quiet window. I
In
don't think
general,
there's been the moves that you sometimes see in January. So again, I don't think we were ever going to get to a position where this worked for everyone. Clearly, I'd rather he was getting more regular playing time. And he's been a bit up and down in terms of how it's affected his play for us. But I think it's what it is, really, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we're in a fortunate position to a degree in that up until recently anyway, Ben Davis has been playing regularly. He had a bit of a hamstring injury a few weeks ago and was on the bench for the last 2 weeks for Tottenham. But he's been playing a lot recently, and I think he will continue to be in and out. Even if he's not playing 90 minutes every week, I think he'll still be in and out and have some involvement in what's happening there. I think Reece Norrington-Davies coming back is a big boost for us in that sense as well, because he can play the left-back position. He can also play the left centre-back. And, you know, with Lockyer being someone who obviously, you know, is not going to come back into the fold, I think having someone like Norrington-Davies, who's that kind of a bit more of a utility player defensively, is also really helpful for us as well. So in turn, it makes the Mepham thing less crucial, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And you know, his minutes are building with Sheffield United as well, aren't they? So that's a good sign. I wanted to mention a couple of other sort of transfer. One of them's a sort of transfer that might have gone under the radar a little bit. Aaron Collins has moved from Bristol Rovers to Bolton. So sort of gone from mid-table Division One to a team vying for the playoffs in Bolton Wanderers. And they probably got him a little bit, you know, a little bit on the cheap side as well. So I think for them, for Bolton, it works as a sort of cost-effective reinforcement for their forwards. And I think for Collins, it's, you know, again, it puts him in a position where he's now playing very meaningful games for a playoff team. So I just thought that was an interesting sort of within the division move.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and there's a few other people like that. I think we'll come to talk about it a bit more when we're looking ahead at the playoff and where everyone is at the minute. But I think someone like him getting that move, moving that step forward again, talking about playing more meaningful games as the business end of the season, I think is going to be beneficial for him. And he's someone we've kind of talked about a few times in terms of is it the time yet for him to have a gamble, for someone to have a gamble on him, and see if he can get in the Wales team. So there's that aspect of it as well. But I agree, an interesting move and a good one.
The other one I wanted to mention was Lee Evans, because he's left Ipswich under mutual agreement. I mean, he's been carrying a lot of injuries recently, and reading about it, he's probably about a month off finishing his rehab.
Yeah.
And Ipswich have said they've agreed between them that he can stay at Portman Road and do his rehab. And then because he's now not under contract with them in a month's time, he becomes a free agent.
Right.
So it's an interesting one. It's a bit of a gamble for him because he still had a year and a half on his contract. But it might, you know, hopefully it means that once his rehab's done and he's a free agent, and he can perhaps end up playing the last, I don't know, say 6 weeks of this season for somebody, and then hopefully get a bet, you know, be in a position to sign something in the summer. But it must have been a really difficult decision for him. So just sort of wanted to wish him well, because it was just an interesting outcome to a difficult set of circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. He's not someone who'd been on my radar at all, if I'm being totally honest with you. I suppose we are, you know, light of people in midfield. It can't harm to have extra people in that situation if he eventually kind of comes back to.
It was more just an unusual set of circumstances, and you know, just felt for him really.
Absolutely. Talking about players at championship level, there, Galois in France has asked us. Are we concerned, if that's the right word, that the majority of our players are playing championship football, or do we think at this stage of the game it kind of doesn't really matter, but as long as they're playing regular football? Where do you kind of sit on that?
I mean, you'd rather someone was a regular in a Premier League club, because it says something about their quality, that generally, I mean, I'm generalising here, but I don't think that you look at the likes of how Leeds and Ipswich and Southampton are playing at the minute versus, I don't know, how Burnley or maybe Forest, or, you know, perhaps that bottom end of the Premier League and the upper end of the Championship isn't so different. It's not, you know, there's a reason it's the same clubs that keep yo-yoing. So I think the regular playing in a good quality team is probably more of a concern than whether it's, you know, if that team is 16th, 17th, 18th in the Premier League versus third, fourth, fifth in the Championship.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think I'd much rather, I mean, as you say, the teams at the top of the Championship and the bottom of the Premier League are fairly similar, ultimately, I think. And I think that they are, I would rather someone be playing every week for a Championship club, even if that means at some point you're playing against slightly substandard opposition compared to sitting on a bench watching Manchester City play or whatever. I'd much rather that. And I think ultimately we've found and we've seen that the more playing time our players get, the better that is for them and for us. So for me, I don't see it as a huge problem. I think there's a it raises a wider question, I think, in the longer term of, you know, who is going to be our next kind of star man, if you like, and is there enough good quality players coming through? There's some young players coming through, but are they going to hit that those heights and play prem, you know, pre regular Premier League football? I think that's a bigger question. But I think in the short term, especially with the playoff game coming up and the nature of the team we're going to be playing against in the first instance anyway, as long as people are playing regularly, I think that's a huge thing for us. Obviously, looking forward to that game, there's a few things that we kind of want to look at. The biggest one for me was the midfield area because Joe Morel's got an injury. Lots of chat that it might be something to do with like an ACL or whatever injury, but we'll have to wait and see on that one. I don't think there's been any news confirmed about that, but it's certainly a knee injury, which I think will rule him out for a long time, almost certainly. The playoff game. And whilst Joe probably wasn't going to start, it does raise into question again that midfield area for us and the fact that we haven't really got much depth there. And, you know, Jordan James and Ampadu will be our starting pair, but then after that, it is quite slim picking. So I just wanted to reference that really and who steps in for him. I mean, do we look backwards in terms of Levitt and Matt Smith or people of that caliber, are we going to look to the future? Maybe, and this is the time that Savage is young. Savage is going to come in and get his chance to have some involvement in and around the squad.
I'd also put Josh Sheehan on that list. In fact,
Yeah, fair.
he might top the list of those four for me. I think between Levitt and Smith, we'd probably go Levitt. Savage has only actually played one 90-minute game since early November, although he's seeing playing time most games. But I think I would put, like I said, I would put Josh Sheehan at the top of that, particularly how well Bolton are playing at the.
Yeah, I agree. I've got a soft spot for Sheehan. I think he's technically very good. He's even though he's quite small and you know, can't be as physical as some of the other people around him. I think he does move the ball well, and he's someone I really like in there. So I've got a lot of time for him. I would agree with you in that sense that Sheehan would be the next one if we needed someone else there. But Savage is having enough game time to make him a possibility there. I've said before that
Yeah,
I'm not Matt
there's
Smith or
always,
Levitt's
there's
biggest fan. So.
also, I mean, we've seen Nico play. I think it was that French friendly we had where he sort of played kind of in that in off the left wing partner in defensive
Yeah.
midfield. excuse me. And with Reece Norrington-Davies hopefully back to, you know, playing full time as well, there might be a little bit of flexibility there that we haven't had recently because we'd needed Nico out on the left. So I think there would be permutations if we couldn't play Ampadu and Jordan James there, but it's not something I hope we don't have to think about that. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, I mean, something else will go wrong between now and then anyway. So I don't suppose we can worry ourselves too much. We talked about Morel going off with his injury there, but also it's good to see Aaron Ramsey back on the Cardiff bench this weekend in an important win against Watford. They won 1-0. Important to see him back on the bench, hopefully getting some game time for Cardiff as well. I mean, we'll save the debate of where and when he will play and all this other stuff, but I think it is important that he gets some minutes as we move forward. And Reuben Colwill is another one who started that win in a bit more of an attacking position for Cardiff on the weekend. So again, great to see Colwill getting some game time, and he's someone who, whilst he can't play in that deeper role, if we're looking at that, or whilst he can't do it as effectively, perhaps he can't play in that deeper role alongside someone like Ampadu. He is someone who can play in more central role as well as an attacking wider role. So again, that versatility, as I think, is important to us. But equally, I think Ramsey is the story there, that he's back in the squad and hopefully we'll get some game time soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too early for us to look at what it might ultimately mean for the playoff game, but just the fact that Colwell in particular, it's just good to see him getting first team football. And I think that's obviously a plus for us. And then Aaron hopefully is just eased in very gently and, you know, it's up to doing 90 minutes come late March.
Yes, let's hope. At the start of the show, I mentioned Newport and their cup run, and that obviously made me and Gary Lineker fall out. But I did just want to reference that really, because I don't know if you watched it over there, Ruth, given the difficulty with these things sometimes. But it was a fantastic game to watch, and it was really entertaining. And Rodney Parade was bouncing, and it was amazing to see, you know, the reaction of everyone once he got back into it, and once they got back into it, sorry, and scored that equalising goal. It was a fantastic ball in, and there was a spell there where Newport were kind of, I don't want to say on top, but were certainly generating a lot of attacking momentum and really got under the skin of Man United. And I think seeing the reaction of some of the Man United players, you know, when they scored their third and fourth goals later on, it, you know, really showed that it was a hell of a tough game for them. They weren't cruising through that game. They were really battling through it. And I was really, really impressed with the fight that Newport put up, really. And just in general, how they, you know, to come back from 2-0 down against Man United is no mean feat, regardless of the circumstance. So, yeah, I just wanted to reference that, really, because I thought it was a fantastic game.
No, I think particularly impressed with how they came back from being 2-0 down. I think it would have been very easy to have dug in and taken an approach of, well, let's not let it get any worse kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Actually, to be, I mean, excuse me, it's not as though they were immensely front-footed or anything.
No.
But I think just to have that kind of surety and self-confidence, hopefully they can just keep building on that. But, you know, they know how to do it in the cup games. I'll give them that.
They really do. And it was a great atmosphere. I think that was the thing I enjoyed. The fact that they had that, the scaffolding stand was built outside someone's house at one end, but they could only see one end of the game, one end of the pitch. It was absolutely brilliant. I loved it. Will Evans is someone I wanted to mention because he scored, I think, 19 goals now this season for Newport, which at that, you know, that level, obviously at any level, sorry, that's decent. But when you consider that Newport aren't, you know, high flying in the league, really, they're kind of mid table, for him to be scoring that many goals at that level for a team that, you know, are not free scoring, I think is really impressive. So I always like to ask these questions, but I really believe that one of our big things that we're missing is a bit of an unknown. And I kind of like the idea of him being in the squad for these playoff games. He's a bit similar to Kiefer Moore in the sense of his size, but he's very mobile. He definitely knows where the back of the net is. He's a bit of a poacher, a fox in the box sort of thing, if we need that later on in a game. I'm not sure I'm advocating for him to be in the squad just yet necessarily, but I wondered your thoughts, because he's definitely someone who, given our struggles in that area for a top quality goal scorer, is it worth someone like him being a gamble that could be in there, or am I jumping the gun?
I think it would be a long shot, but I mean, he's scoring a goal every other game in the league. You can't ignore that when we're not great at scoring goals. And exactly, the only way we're going to get through these playoffs is to win two games, you know? So I can't see Paige going down that route, but I think the question is worth asking whether Will Evans is the solution, not necessarily, but I think there is a definite question here in terms of what is our approach as a backup striker if we're going down, and we keep coming back to this, if we're going down the Kiefer Moore route, we don't have a way to do that without Kiefer Moore.
Yeah.
And I think it's in a squad system, you ought to have someone there, someone earmarked as being that equivalence. Not saying that it would ever be necessarily what you do first of all as the next scenario if Kiefer Moore wasn't available. But I've never liked the fact that we're entirely wedded to a player for the whole system to work. I think if you feel the system has merit, then you should always have a reserve for the key aspects of it.
Yeah, I think that's so true. We've talked about this so many times. Jeffcott, I think, ironically, was one of the reasons that we spent so long talking about him, was that exact reason. But I think ultimately the principle is the same, and I entirely agree with you. I think that the key for me is we don't entirely seem to have decided on a plan A, to therefore be also looking at a plan B that would involve a different striker and a different tackle or whatever. As again, that's a longer term thing we need to do. But in the short term of these games, you know, we can't do that. I think you're right that, you know, that we do need a you know, a plan A brackets one to change something small within the system and the game or whatever, if let's say Moore gets injured. So again, I'm not per se saying that Will Evans is the answer, but I do think, as you said, there's definitely a question to be asked in that. And I don't know. Well, I'm sure we'll come to that closer to the games themselves. But you, as you say, you can't ignore someone who's scoring pretty much 20 goals in a season when they've never played at that level before either.
There's also the bigger picture about what it
questions.
Would say, given where his, you know, where his football history is and his sort of route through the Cymru leagues, and I think there's a sort of Roy of the Rovers element to that as well, isn't
100%.
There, which is kind of just appealing as a story.
And when you look at the fact that Paul Mullin, we were talking about him last year, and he's scored 10 goals this season, you know, again, it's an interesting question to ask, isn't it? It's an interesting perspective to look at. We're going to take a quick break here as our Zoom meeting is just about to fall out of being free, and we'll be back with you in a moment. Okay, we are back for the second part of the show. First of all, I just want to say a big thank you to one of our followers, Boosh Taliesin, as he calls himself on Twitter, Paul, in real life, who's donated to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream. And he's donated and helped us keep this podcast going, keep this podcast free. If you do want to help us, please go to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream. And there you can donate a small amount of money or a large amount of money, depending on how flush you are, to help keep this podcast going. Whilst we love doing this, it is a lot of things, but free is not one of them. So any help and support we can get to keep this going so that that it is free and we do keep going would be very much gratefully received. In the same way, if you do want to support us, please go to bagsybags.com. And you can use the code CHAD10, which will give you 10% off. And in doing so, you're getting yourself a nice bag or jumper or T-shirt, but it's a little bit of that sale also goes to us as well. So if you do want to go and buy yourself something nice from bagsybags.com, use the code CHAD10 for 10% off and help us in the process. Ruth, we said we were going to talk about the Nations League, and here we are. The draw is on Thursday, the 8th of February, at 6 o'clock European time. We're going to be in League B this time for the men, which means we are obviously not playing any of the big teams, but we are still in what I think will be a very competitive draw for us. The league is split into four pots. We are in the top pot as we've just got relegated from League A. So we're in a pot with Austria, Czechia, England, Boo and Hiss, and of course, Wales. Then the other pots, Finland, Ukraine, Iceland, Norway. Pot three is Slovenia, Republic of Ireland, Albania and Montenegro. And pot four is Georgia, Greece, Turkey and Kazakhstan. I'm really excited about the Nations League, to be honest, because I think it's provided some real value for us in the past, not just in terms of getting players through and giving people an opportunity, which I think is really, really important for us. But also it's given us some great days and some great trips and some great wins, which obviously took us into that top league last year. But it's I think the value of these is so important for a team like Wales, who can play teams at our level whilst bringing up younger players in a competitive-ish environment, but not one that's kind of life or death like the playoffs or the qualifiers. So I'm really excited about these games. How do you think the Nations League has gone?
I've enjoyed it. I mean, I think we were all very confused at the start, but I think its value is certainly become more evident. I think particularly for teams even lower ranked than us, you look at how Macedonia, for example, and, you know, they're just different teams that have managed to come through and have an impact through these arrangements. And then you go to the very lowly teams where scoring a goal is a big event, and I think it's really important that we're kind of inclusive and provide teams opportunities to play these sorts of games and make them meaningful. Don't make them friendlies, you know. So I've become a convert, I have to say. I think initially I was just like, what the heck is this? But I've warmed to it immensely. Yeah, League B is interesting because I'm sure it'll be immensely competitive, but you've actually got quite a disparate range of teams based on ranking. England are obviously three in the world at the minute, and it goes all the way down to Kazakhstan, who are 100. So, but I don't think the games will be as, I don't think there'll be one-sided games in that sense, in the way that you might expect just looking at the rankings. I think it's got the potential to be a very close set of games across the whole league, actually.
Well, I was thinking that because if you look at the whole set of it, I mean, quite conceivably, you could have England, who are, as you said, a third in the world, Ukraine, who are a very strong side and only just missed out in England's group to the England and
They're
Italy,
actually the second best ranked team in the group,
which is mad.
ironically, even though they're in the pot two of the group, they're
In
the
the in that
second.
second pot, right? So you've got that and Albania, who qualified, I think, top of their own group. And Turkey, who also qualified
Turkey,
after having a win in our group. So
well, let's make that England's group
yeah, I'd be
then.
delighted with that. Well done, lads. You crack on with that one. Enjoy yourself. So with all of that said, obviously we want England to have that horrible tough group of Albania, Ukraine and Turkey. Who would you want as our kind of ideal group?
Well, if you just, seeing as we've been talking about rankings, if you just base it on rankings, you'd go for Iceland, Montenegro, and Kazakhstan. And I think that would be okay, actually, all things considered. Pot three is the one where the groups are most closely aligned in their rankings. So I think I can see people just wanting to avoid the Republic of Ireland because it's just we just never seem to be our best against them. And it's, although it might be a nice away trip to Dublin, that said. And then I think the pot four, again, the Turks are obviously the strength in that pot. I think avoiding them and avoiding Ukraine, and then beyond that, I'm not quite so wedded
So what we get.
to what we get. I think, by the time you get down to the fourth group, they're all pretty far away. There's going to be a lot, relatively speaking, a long journey for any of those four. So just not Turkey, I think, in that group. So yeah, I think just like I said, on rankings, it would be Iceland, Montenegro, and Kazakhstan. I think I'd be happy with that. Avoid Ukraine and Turkey.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm not far off, to be honest. I think in an ideal world, I think we'd have Iceland because I think they're on the very much on the way down of their particular journey. I think Montenegro is a somewhere I've never been before, and I don't think it would be that difficult. I also would be that fussed about Republic of Ireland. I've been to there before, but obviously, but I've never done Ireland away. Slovenia, I went in the summer, is one of my absolute favourite places now, so I'd be delighted with any of those ones. I just would avoid Albania for football reasons, but again, I've never been to Tirana, so stick that one on the list. I think for me, the bottom one, in a weird way, is kind of the hardest one to choose who you want, because Georgia are a good side and have got some good players and are on an upward trajectory themselves. We all know about Turkey, and that's a difficult away game for one. But again, topped our group are a very good side. Kazakhstan is such a long trip away that generates its own problems. So Greece would become the best one for a selection of reasons. One of them would that'd be a great trip. But also, I think in a footballing sense, that's also a decent winnable games. I think the thing we said at the start of this is really the crux here, though, and it sort of doesn't matter because a lot of these teams are very similar to one another. I think, yeah, okay, I'd like to avoid Ukraine if push comes to shove, but them or Finland or Norway, I mean, they're still tricky sides in the same way that in that middle group, Slovenia, they did well in qualifying. Albania topped the group, I think. So they're all much of a muchness at that point. I think that's about a fairer way to look at it.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think given the apparent disparity on rankings, I don't think the things are as varied as that might indicate. And I think there's going to be competitive games all over the place. I would like to avoid Turkey because I think they are so much better than a pot four League B team kind of indicates. And I think they're clearly going in the right direction. So I think they might be top of my avoid list. And then I can see your argument about how Greece might be just the sort of logistics of it and pleasantness, as it were, of the trip has plus points. But then we're getting into the whole kind of what do we want for Wales away, which is probably not quite the same as we want for what we want for
Speak for
the
yourself, Ruth. I'm
team.
sure they'd much rather a trip to Greece than Kazakhstan. I suppose, on a footballing perspective, the Kazakhstan game is probably the the most desirable purely from a football perspective. But I think ultimately, I think we're in a very positive position here that we're in the top pot, if you like, of those teams, considering we have undergone some struggles of late ourselves. We're avoiding England, which is always a bonus in my eyes. And then after that, as you say, the other teams are much of a much less. I actually think in a weird way as well, it would be kind of a bonus to not go up or go down in this turnaround and just kind of stay where we are for a year, purely because I think it gives us opportunities in the next time around to, again, to blood players and not treat it as a friendly per se, but also not, it's not as important. Like, you don't want to go and play a big team like England or France or Spain or Germany or whatever. And, you know, like we did with the Dutch, we had to play our full strength team pretty much because we knew we were going to get battered otherwise. Same with the Belgians. So it gives us a bit of flexibility in terms of a development angle as well. I will say the only thing is that if we do win our league, it guarantees us at least a playoff for the 2026 World Cup. So there is a real positive aspect for that, I suppose, in that sense that it guarantees us that back door, if you like, should it come to it further down the line. And I do think that would be a bonus to have in our pocket. But I also think it's quite a tough League B to win. I think there's going to be a lot of draws and a lot of teams beating each other. I think it's going to be a bit of a scramble at the end to win the league.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. But I think the more routes we can keep open for competition qualification, the better, clearly. Stating the obvious, but
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, please do tell us who your dream home and away trip would be for that, for either football purposes or for getting drunk purposes. You choose. We've mentioned the Republic of Ireland there, Ruth. A seamless link through to the women's game that has recently been announced. I know, it's like we've practiced. Gary Lineker, you could learn a few things here, mate. Get back in touch, pal. Get on the pod. I'm sure he listens. Yes, that has been announced for the 27th of February, away, which will be obviously in Ireland. That game today has been announced that John Gray, who's going to be the interim coach in the short term, is going to be taking charge of that match. And it's been announced that Helen Ward and James Robery, who was formerly the Newport County head coach, have been appointed on a short-term basis to support him in that. Really interesting group of people there. And I don't know if that lends itself to talking further about who the next choice of manager will be. But I don't think it's the sort of thing that Helen Ward wants right now. But I do think, again, it's an interesting conversation there because I think John Gray, I think he's not really in the running. I think that's not the sort of person we want. But I think someone like James Robery, I'm not suggesting for a moment that I have any inside knowledge here, but I think he might be a good sort of candidate for that women's job looking forward, in the sense that he's had a bit of experience. That way he wants to play is very clear, as he demonstrated at Newport. And interesting that he wants to be in that FAW setup as well. So it could be a bit of a way in for him, but equally very interesting that those people are going to be involved in this next round of games.
Yeah, I mean, John Gray, interesting, you know, he came across from Swansea and became the first time we've had a full-time assistant manager for the women, actually, when he joined spring of last year. So that's the sort of interesting role in itself. And it does make this sort of interim nature of what he's doing at the minute make sense. Mowbray, I think, is an interesting inclusion. He's obviously thought of very well at the FAW in terms of his role within the coach training process that we have so embedded at the FAW. And I think the Ireland are an interesting team. You know, they're a bit ahead of us in the world rankings. They're into that kind of, you know, how we've talked a lot about how there's, once you get to about 12th or 15th in the world, there's not a great deal of difference. So they're sort of on the cusp of that, aren't they? I think they're in the high teens on the rankings, if I remember rightly. So I think that's good, you know, an away game without it being quite so much geography challenges of an away game. That's, you know, that's a plus as well. And then the Euros qualifying, is the draw for that is just around the corner. I think that'll be a couple of weeks after this friendly. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's just an interesting inclusion in the schedule. It's important, obviously, that the squad gets together in this window, even if the whole managerial situation is still a bit up in the air. And I think it's an interesting kind of test run for this group. Helen Ward, I think in a podcast I was listening to, she, you know, she doesn't want the manager's role, but the coach's role, but I'm pretty confident she'd be happy to get involved.
Yeah.
Helen's not the sort to shy away from that sort of thing.
No, I agree. And I think, again, it's good that they're getting different people to have a look at it as well. You know, we've talked about Matty Smith previously, Lauren Dykes is someone we've talked about previously. Now Helen Ward is getting involved. Just on what you're saying about Ireland, again, like a great point. They are, you know, the team that we want to be to many degrees, in that, you know, that we've talked about that gap. That and bridging that gap, they're one of these teams bridging that gap, and they're on a great run of form. They obviously qualify for the World Cup in their Nations League games. They beat Hungary, Albania, Northern Ireland, and obviously they had a decent effort at the World Cup. They ran Australia close in the first game, drew with Nigeria, and went 1-0 up against a strong Canada side, ended up losing the game. But, you know, again, a very good side. And the run that they were on before that, they lost twice to the USA, but both in close games, beating teams like Morocco and Scotland, who have also been in and around us. So I think they are the team we want to aim to be in many ways. So I think that's a positive, challenging step. We've played teams like France and the USA, who are a big way above us, but I think that next step is definitely where the Republic of Ireland are. In terms of making next steps, I am on fire today. It's worth noting that Angharra James and Lily Woodham have both made steps across the Atlantic. Obviously, Ruth, they are desperate to be on the podcast. They want to get closer to you. Never mind Jess Fleshlock is playing Seattle. They want to be closer to you. They have both moved to Seattle to be at the same club there as Jess. A great move for the two of them, for obvious footballing reasons, from a Welsh perspective, obviously playing with Jess, but fantastic move for them for personal reasons. The fact that, again, we've got two of our most important players moving across to play in the best league in the world. Also with, again, you know, the experience, the quality that Jess has, and a team that are challenging for things every season. It's a big move for them and a great opportunity for both of them.
It is. I mean, I always felt for Angharra James a bit, because she moved across here originally, like right in the middle of the COVID restrictions. And I think it must have been incredibly difficult to settle and get acclimatized and just feel part of the place. And obviously she went back to the UK. So I'm really glad for her that another opportunity has come up, which hopefully will run a little more smoothly. And I think it's also testament to the level of our players, that the level of our pool, that they're being scouted by the likes of OL Reign and Seattle. And, you know, suddenly we've got three players at one team that has its pluses and minuses, but to suddenly have three players over this side of the Atlantic playing this league it's another step in the women's development. It's also another step about putting Welsh women's football on the map as well. You know, the international last summer helped, but all of these things, I mean, I think it's hard to underestimate how much Jess's impact has in terms of people just, you know, being aware where she's from and where home is and who she plays for internationally. And I just think more of that is good as well.
Absolutely. And I think we're still at the growing it phase. You know, we're a far cry from wanting this finished, and, you know, the finished product is what I mean there. And I think the fact that the game continues to grow and we can be a part of that, and it's helping, you know, again, like, it's the thing we always say, isn't it, about visibility. You're seeing your heroes, the people you watch and aspire to, go and be a professional footballer somewhere in the biggest league in the world. I think that has its own value in a development sense, but also, you know, for a personal level as well, those players are going to be playing with the best players and using the best coaches in these amazing facilities. And again, that helps Wales in terms of what they're used to and their own personal development. So yeah, nothing but positive as far as I can see. With all of those things said, Ruth, we've talked a lot, we've fitted a lot in today, actually. Have you got any other business, anything you would wish to add?
No, I think that's more than enough to keep folks busy. You're going to be busy splicing this together because we've had all sorts of Zoom problems, so good luck with that.
I do every now and again. I do. We wish we did these as YouTube things every once in a while, or more often, because the faces that the pair of us pull while we're trying to work out technology issues is worth a YouTube channel all by itself. Anyway, I digress. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to support us. Go to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream, or you can go to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 for 10% off and help us in the process of doing both of those things. Thank you for your time, Ruth.
A Oh, you're welcome. It's nice. It's always good to witter on.
It
That's what
really
we
is.
do.
We will hopefully be back in the next 2 weeks. We're hoping that the next time we speak to you, we have a very special guest on. I don't want to jinx it and say who it is, but there'll be a very
Don't
special
jinx it.
guest, hopefully. Hopefully when we speak to you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting us. And we will see you very soon. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.